DW Africa Link. People are suffering in Africa's Sahel region. For decades, the people of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso have been trapped in a cycle of instability. This has been fueled by terrorism, fragile governments, poverty, and corruption, leaving communities in a constant state of fear and uncertainty. We'll look at the findings from an investigation on the ground and try to figure out if there is any hope of the nightmare ending. That's what's coming up.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter. In a four-month investigation, members of the Network of African Investigative Reporters and Editors, NIRE, went largely undercover in the Sahel. They aimed to discover how people live their lives through all the challenges. So, why is it important to do this? What exactly did they find? And what is their recommendation for change? I am joined by some of the journalists who undertook the investigation in the Sahel. Malik Sadibu Koulibaly was in Mali. Also joining me is Evelyn Groning, the coordinator of the ZAM project. ZAM is an Amsterdam-based multimedia platform that supports journalists and publishes their investigative pieces. And then we have our very own Bram Postumus, DW correspondent focusing on the Sahel region. Hello and welcome to all of you. People want to understand the thought process that you had. What made you just decide, together with your team, that, hey, let's go to the Sahel region and investigate what's going there, what's going on there?
Yeah, in Sahel, you know, since three or four years, we have strange militaries who are fighting with our national armies, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, against terrorism. And in their way, they are also killing civilians. That is a background, that is a very big problem we have in current situation.
Right. And basically, in a nutshell, you went there because to investigate, because it's not very clear exactly what's happening on the ground. I mean, you see in the news, you know, there's some attacks here and there, but it's difficult to really get the severity of it if you're not actually monitoring it on the ground. And that's why you and your team went there. What's also interesting is the focus was to find out how all this is impacting innocent people on the ground in Mali, which is where you were. What did you find out?
Beyond of testimonies about these crimes against civilians, we also discovered that militaries are leading the country since 2020, 4 years ago. So they are also working to keep the power. They are also working to use public money for personal gains.
Let me come to you, Evelyn, because your platform sanctioned and supported this investigation and also aired the investigation. Why was it important for you to do that?
This is the strength of a report such as this. We don't come up with the topic. It is the network. Actually, in this case, it was an organization that works with journalists in West Africa, Senoso, people from Senoso, and Ghana-based undercover filmmaker Anas Arameo Anas. Ghana is not the Sahel, but it's also in West Africa. They came to ZAM and said, we need to do this thing because there is military oppressing the people in all these Sahel countries. People are fleeing, even to Ghana people. Ghana is receiving refugees. Anas is managing a kind of safe haven, Wachik, for refugees, refugee journalists, whistleblower journalists. So when these people in the discussion with them say, this is important because we need to highlight what's going on, the people on the ground, even the journalists on the ground, are being suppressed. And even somebody like Malik, who is in Mali, is suppressed on the ground. He can't go around freely and say, look, I got this testimony from these people and I'm publishing it here freely under my own name. No, next thing you know, he'll be jailed or worse, which is why them now we offer a platform for publishing in freedom. So we offer that sort of anonymity when it's needed, and recollect those stories whilst the guys on the ground in Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali were doing all this.
Right. Before we bring back Malik, Bram Postumus is our correspondent on the ground, and we've been going to Bram, you know, quite often to get what's going on. And Bram, you've been covering this for several years. Knowing what came out of the investigation that we were talking about, how much can you relate with the findings?
Oh, I can relate to them enormously. What Malik and our other colleagues on the ground have come up with has been absolutely invaluable. Because it rips away the veil and shows us the realities on the ground, which the military governments desperately try to hide from not only their own people to begin with, but also from the world at large. So this is an immensely important contribution, and it also confirms the things that I keep hearing from people in my own network. To the effect that they're telling, just don't believe the propaganda that gets out on the state-run media, or indeed what you have been seeing occurring in all three countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. And Burkina Faso is arguably the most extreme case of the three right now. But the fact that the press has been forced to align with the vision, the government vision, the government point of view, there is no space for any other dissident or other, you know, sounding opinion, let alone verified information from people on the ground. You know, this doesn't mean to say that there is no support for these military juntas, but everything that doesn't align with the view of these juntas and reveals the truth of what really is going on in this immense part, all these three countries, is incredibly important because we hardly ever get to see this. So I can relate to it very well.
I can relate with what you're saying because I get a lot of sense of what you've been covering on the ground for so many years. And Malik, you having this chance to also talk to a lot of people that are going through some sort of crisis because of the insecurity where they are. How hopeful are they that things will get better sooner than later when you spoke to them?
Okay, thank you. So far, nobody can say when the military power will end, really, really. But the hope is depending on that situation. My colleague Bram was highlight the fact that there are something like propaganda. In Mali, If you are a journalist or activist, you need to support that situation.
Can I butt in here? I think it is a very, very important point that Malik is making about how journalists should be able to work in their own country, not just because that is an ethical rule that journalists should be able to be journalists, but the public is being bitten. First, it was bitten by regimes that were connected to France. There was a lot of corruption and violence and terrorism. They were bitten by the terrorists. Now they are bitten by Russian new allies of new governments. They're always getting bitten, and they never get a chance to actually debate what is going on and how can we set out a course for our country. Now, what we are trying to do with them to have these things published and then circulated back into Mali, because social media, thank goodness for social media, you get these stories circulated back into Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, where they sort of passed on underground. And we have received signs that this public debate is actually starting now. The first slogans, Russia out, have appeared on the walls of the Russian office in Niger. And not to say that we did that, but it is a sign that the debate is happening, and hopefully we made a contribution to that.
Right. I mean, I would bet my last dime that you're definitely contributing to that. Bram, let me come to you on this, because, again, regarding the Sahel, it's not a new situation, right? The situation has been dire for a while now, whether it was when French forces were there or Western forces were there, and now, you know, in comes the Russian forces, and it's the same old situation. So what exactly is the problem? I don't think it's just a case of saying the Russians are the problem and it was that good when the Western forces were there, is it?
No, not at all, actually. You are asking me to beat a drum that I've been beating consistently for more than 10 years. The issue that is at the heart of the problem of organized violence is the fact that the regions where this violence mostly occurs are all marginalized. And that means that the economic prospects for people living in far away, far-flung areas with little or no connection to the capital cities and little or no political clout have very few means available to make themselves heard. And what you see happening is a repetition of the kind of recruitment that I've covered in, for instance, a country like Liberia. The motive is different. It's now done under the cloak of a so-called Islam, which every Malian will tell you has got nothing to do with their own faith, because it's quite different. We are dealing with a region that's under military rule. You know, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso have been under military rule for up to 5 years now.
Let me come to you, Evelyn, because based on what you said, it's basically highlighting how important the work of these journalists that went undercover in the Sahel is. The billion-dollar question is, how optimistic are you, or should we be, that their findings will change much on the ground?
Well, Jerry, I just the one thing that made me a little happy was when our Niger team member sent us pictures, as I said, on the walls of Niamey, where the Russian trade office is, Russia out, which is like a sign that people who were flummoxed and silenced, and first they were bitten by the French colonizers, then they were bitten by new Russian colonizers, then there's these terrorists that Bram will still tell us about, the marginalized youth in areas where they're easy meat for recruitment for terrorists. So people are starting to group together and at least develop a kind of network that results in such slogans painted on the walls. And that is small. I mean, what is one slogan on a wall? It is small, but in context of the way people have been mistreated in those countries, not just for the past few years, but for decades, it is an important development. And what the journalists also did was they spoke to academics, of course, also very scared academics, because even those in universities, even professors are not safe if they criticize the important political powers and the military powers of the day. But they're starting to think about how can these countries come away from the grip of the colonizers, whether they are French or Russian or Islamic terrorists or whatever. I call them colonizers too, because, you know, people are also suffering under them. It's true. How can we come together as a people and start building our institutions our own way and develop our countries our own way and progress and be able to farm and be able to build our businesses? And that discussion is about to happen. It's just very small steps, and people are still being oppressed, but there are signs that it is happening, and that is good.
Right. Little steps, I guess, or little drops of water make a mighty ocean, it is said. Bram, let me come to you, because when it comes to the Sahel, again, you have been covering it for years. Every time that we speak, There's hardly any good news coming from there. Is it just a case of Russians sort of replacing Western forces has even made the situation worse, or what exactly are we saying?
Right. The issue is not so much who is doing the assisting, whether it's the French or the Russians or anyone else. It is a question of what the assistance consists of. And we have a military mindset that is only capable of dealing with this situation using military means. In other words, violence. And this hasn't worked. This hasn't worked with the French. It hasn't worked with the Russians. And whoever else comes in and tries the same solution is bound to fail because we're not addressing the root causes. And this is a drum I've been beating for more than a decade. The issue is the fact that we are dealing here with very marginalized areas where the prospects for economic development are extremely limited. And you can see this in the way that people, for instance, are leaving those areas and going into the towns and the cities. Because that's where there is some kind of an opportunity to better your life. It's not there where you are staying in the village or in the land, because it doesn't bring enough in to make your life economically viable. So it is pretty natural that if there are unscrupulous individuals coming in and are giving you, again, fake solutions through violence, the way Charles Taylor did this in Liberia, and now it's happening under the cloak of religion. It's the same mechanism at work. A lot of young men especially, but also young women, will go, all right, since nothing else works for me, let me try this. And let me see if that brings in, you know, a better position, the one that I aspire to. So if you do not address the issue of marginalization, which is absolutely central to understanding what's going on, you will get nowhere.
And it seems, as things stand, we've not really gotten anywhere, have we? I mean, whose responsibility is it to address the marginalization?
Well, at the end of the day, it's a governance issue. It's an issue of a government in the capital city, which is mostly insulated from what happens everywhere else, and which doesn't really seem to care about much anything else beyond its own bubble. If you take the example of Mali, which we've been talking about most of the time, when you leave Bamako in any direction, it doesn't really matter which direction you go, you will find that you will have villages where there are very poor facilities, hardly any electricity, very difficult to find drinking water, hardly any decent health facilities and schools. And this is in the part of the country that is supposed to be better off than the rest. So you have had a long history of neglect. And this is what people have been up against, pretty much since colonial days and arguably even before. But that's a completely different debate altogether. Neglect is at the heart of the issue. And as long as there is no signal coming from the neglected areas that we are here and we want to be taken seriously, then they will be absolutely ignored. And the only way that they can make themselves heard at this particular point in time is through violence. It's extremely unfortunate, but at the heart of the whole issue is not just, you know, the combination of neglect, of marginalization, and the fact that we are dealing with governments that don't care whether they're democratically elected or indeed come in through the barrel of a gun. The mentality is the same. That needs to fundamentally change.
At ZERM, we talk about these governments as kleptocracies because basically that's what they are. So many governments in Africa have not developed from beyond colonial times, and there's lots of geopolitical reasons for that. Fraudulent elections, political elites who cling to power, and they just basically soup up state budgets between themselves. And they really don't care about the country. And this is also what democratic debate and brave journalism aspires to change.
Right. You know, I would want to see the glass half full, but forgive me, guys, I don't see it. You know, I always feel like with such discussions, we always know what the possible solutions are, but the people in power that should make those solutions are not doing it, for reasons best known to themselves or for selfish or personal reasons, right? And we just keep going through the same cycle. Let me come to you, Malik, because Again, with this investigation that you carried out on the ground in the Sahel, in Mali specifically, you were, what do the people expect, right? Mali, obviously dealing with a junta-led government, are they trying to get the government out now, or what exactly are the people pushing for now?
The citizens don't have a gun, they don't have a weapon. They are in a situation that can't help them to change things. You know, with military power, things are not the same if it is with civilian. If you compare it with civilian, you see, each voice who can say other things against the government. You know, we don't have justice right now in our country. We don't have justice. That's why the only thing they do is to arrest you. As Bram said, we don't have electricity right now since 2 years per day in Mali. In Bamako, for example, which is the capital, you have the light for only 6 hours per day. That is a problem. We never be facing such a situation in Mali. Citizens don't have choice right now, but we don't know how things will change.
Right, right. And Evelyn, as we've said, the people that, you know, actually have the power to change things are not really changing it. But we all agree that if you unearth what's going on, let the rest of the world see it, that can go a long way eventually. And that's why it's important to support journalist findings like these, isn't it?
Absolutely. I can even hear from Western institutions and even government people sometimes commenting on what's going on in the Sahel. They talk about how the Russians now recently managed to befriend those military governments and get in their Wagner mercenary, special forces, whatever, and make everything worse. And they will say, how did the Russians do this? It was just a lot of propaganda. They made the people like them. And we have to point out to these Western institutions that, no, actually, France, you did a very, very bad thing in the Sahel. You did not help progress and democracy. And then people got fed up with you and they thought they had to make friends with other people, with Russia. There was so much support for Russia in the beginning. And now, during our investigation, you actually saw it. You saw it, especially in Niger and Burkina Faso. I think in Mali, the people were already a bit more aware. But in Niger and Burkina Faso, the popular sentiment and the demonstrations and all that, it actually started to go down as people realized these Russians are not better than the French. In fact, in many ways, they are worse. And these military captains who now oppress us are still worse than the fake government. Well, many people would call them fake governments, but let's say they were elected governments before. So that is something that is not even known by important Western players, let alone that you need information as a public in Niger, Burkina Faso and Mali. But it seems that the big guys with all the social media and TV change on their at their fingertips, they also need more information sometimes, apparently.
So, Bram, where do we go from here? Out goes the Western forces, in comes the Russian forces. The situation is not any better. The people want some sort of change. They are in dire situations or conditions.
Well, it's more of the same, really, isn't it? I mean, and arguably worse. I mean, in terms of the kind of motives that the Russians have as compared to the others, pretty similar, you know, geopolitical influence and all the rest of it. And the only thing you could possibly argue is that the Russians are slightly more violent and brutal than the previous force, and at least they don't even pretend to abide by the rule of law. So in that sense, there's less hypocrisy, if you will. But on the whole, I mean, we should be looking at much deeper roots here. I mean, we should be looking at a journey of rediscovery. That sounds all terribly, terribly new agey, but what I mean is this. Mali is 1,000 years old. It has a history. It has structures of government that are way, way before the first colonialists even knew that Africa existed. So in there are structures in place, there are ways of governance, there are methods of governance in place that are age old and have proven their worth until colonialism upended this and made the mess that we are seeing currently, because we've got several governance structures in place, and the ones that were imposed from the West, by France in this case, are not recognized by the people. They don't care about these structures, but they have to deal with them because they can be enforced with state violence. And that's where the problem is. The colonial state was violent. Its successor states are also violent. If you want to go to durable solutions, you need to take the long view. This is not going to be over this year, next year, not even next decade. But as long as that self-discovery and that rediscovery of your own authentically African ways of governing places, governing countries, governing empires, much larger than Mali is today. You know, if those old ways of this, of how you used to successfully govern your own peoples and countries, if that self-discovery doesn't occur, I don't think that we can get out of this, because we're using tools that are inept for the situation that Mali finds itself in.
Thanks to brave journalists like Malik Sadibou Koulibaly, who went undercover in his country, Mali, to highlight the challenges there. Hopefully, the world is listening to help make a difference. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.